This is Wilderness and Wildlife, presented by the Gallatin Wildlife Association in Bozeman, Montana. This is a half-hour program featuring commentaries and interviews with wildlife and wilderness advocates relating to the unique natural environment that we enjoy in the wildlands of the West and across America. I'm your host, Ben Churchwell. This is the second of a two-part episode featuring Jim Engel and Clint Nagel. Jim Engel represents a Gallatin-based grassroots organization called Montanans for Wildlife and Wilderness. The group advocates for local wilderness protections, particularly focused on the Highlight Porcupine Buffalo Horn Wilderness Study Area. Jim was previously a professor of literature at Harvard University, where he incorporated environmental issues into his coursework. He also co-edited and conceptualized the book titled Environment, an Interdisciplinary Anthology. Clint Nagel is the president of the Gallatin Wildlife Association, who previously worked for the Water Resources Division of the U.S. Geological Survey. Since retirement, Clint has volunteered his time to a variety of grassroots conservation groups.
Over the years, the greatest acknowledgement has been the value of the Wilderness Study Area because it contains so much valuable wildlife habitat. And that also includes potential wildlife connectivity and corridors for wildlife. As many people probably know, that we've been trying to get connectivity for grizzly bears, for example, to travel north and from the bears in the Continental Divide ecosystem to travel south to kind of make sure that the grizzly bear population in the greater Yellowstone ecosystem does not become isolated. That has not happened yet. And so one of our goals as GWA is to make sure that connectivity does happen. The removal of some of these lands within the Wilderness Study Area, we believe, makes that less likely to happen. The Gallatin Forest Partnership, they have gone in and they've taken, like I said, 40% of this landscape out of wilderness potential. And they called it, they put it under different categories, different names, different land use designations. One of the big differences in why we're so animated against removing these sections of landscape out of the Wilderness Study Area is it's key to valuable wildlife habitat. And to take them out, you're just going to have that much more impact to wildlife over decades to come, especially with climate change and other influences. I mean, you can't hardly go back into the Gallatin Range now and not see or find some evidence of human contamination to some degree. Some people might think that's a hyperbole, but let's face it, there's the more people that move into the area, the more that want to use the wildlands as an escape for their private life, the more impact you're going to have upon that landscape. And the Gallatin Range is indicative. It's a prime example of that very overuse. It's kind of like what they say of Yosemite National Park and Yellowstone National Park, that we're loving this area to death. And that's kind of what's going on in the Gallatin Range right now. And that's why we need to keep it as, preserve it as much wild as we can. And so that's one of the big differences between Montanans for Wildlife and Wilderness and GWA with some of the other groups that want to basically trade some of that land away into recreational use.
Yeah, I would say also that it's important to realize that if you look beyond the wilderness study areas and beyond the national forest, the development in this area of southwestern Montana is so rapid now and is accelerating that puts further pressures on wildlife. All the new housing developments, all the new fences, new roads, increased traffic on roads, just makes it a lot harder for elk, for moose, for bison, for wolves. In other words, there are areas which are not wilderness study areas and not national forest, which used to be open to these animals and in which they often had free movement. Well, that doesn't exist much anymore. And it's being closed off very rapidly in areas where it does exist. So that places all the more importance on preserving what has been designated as wilderness and wilderness study areas and preserving that because the surrounding area is just becoming more and more built up and as a result creates its own external pressures.
We've talked quite a bit about the habitat quality and irreplaceable wilderness characteristics of this range. The Gallatin and many other regions, across the world are facing concurrent pressures, given the context of anthropogenic global change. So I'm curious how wilderness study areas and maintaining wilderness characteristics of these landscapes provides additional value in the face of climate change.
Well, that's something that some of the scientists in our group could probably answer better than I could. We have some very fine scientists in our group, but I'll give this question a shot, Ben. First of all, it's important to provide a varied refuge from climate change in terms of water, in terms of altitude, and in terms of vegetation. That is to say, when climate change occurs rapidly, and it's now occurring about 250 times more rapidly than ever in Earth's history. So, yes, our climate has always changed. There's no doubt about that. But the rapidity of the change now is enormous. Well, that means that wildlife has got to adjust to different temperature, different snowpack, different rainfall, different humidity. All those conditions are part of its habitat. Well, if you restrict the size of that habitat, you're restricting the ability of wildlife to adjust. Some wildlife may find that it's going to have to move to higher elevations. Some may find it's going to have to move to lower or different elevations or different locations in order to find a more optimal habitat. And climate change is going to continue for many, many decades, perhaps even centuries. So this is something that is not just a problem for the next few years or the next 10 years or however we look at it in a shorter time frame. This is a problem for the rest of this century. So we've got to imagine things. We have to use our imaginations and say, what is the Gallatin Range going to look like in 2050? What will be its population in the surrounding area? What will be the number of motorized vehicles that are available for recreation in 2050? What will be climate change in 2050? That's not so far away. That's 25 years. And so the more space and the more variation that we can give wildlife for their adaptation, and because they will have to adapt to climate, the better. If we cut down their options, we just make life a lot harder for them. And as we all know, people come to the area to recreate, but they come for the wildlife too. I mean, I've been in areas where, the sighting of one moose or the sighting of one wolf or the sighting of one coyote, immediately gets people attracted and the scopes go up or if you see people looking at say mountain goats or a bighorn sheep or something like that, it's just an amazing experience and people love it. I mean, it's been estimated that in terms of say wolves in Montana, it brings in $80 million a year in tourist and economic value. So we've got to find a way to protect this wildlife. It can't protect itself. We have to remember that. And it is already more constricted and limited than it was 10 years ago, and a lot more than it was 50 years ago in many ways. So it's a responsibility, I think, to do what we can for it. And when we think about conservation and environment, we very often think about human beings enjoying it and human health, and that's a big part of it, of course. But a big part of it is also, do we value this wildlife? Or do we, in the end, only want really the opportunity to see it in certain limited preserves and zoos? And that would be a great shame, I think, because we do have the opportunity to preserve it.
Absolutely.
Your question, Ben, kind of rings back to the presentation that we had in September from Dr. Dominic Della Sala. That was nearly the title of his talk to the public at the Museum of the Rockies here in Bozeman. But because what he was talking about was the potential or the problematic, I should say, future change that we could see from the impact of just population growth and from climate change, how that was going to impact our local environment here, what we actually see on the ground, our forest, our waterways, our climate, all that would change to some degree because of the impact of both of those issues. The one thing that the Greater Yellowstone ecosystem is of great value to basically the preservation of the temperate forest across the United States. This ecosystem is probably the last best place to view that ecosystem in nearly its entirety. And so the value of keeping our forests intact is cannot be underestimated. And that seems to be a hard concept for many people to take. It almost seems like they take it for granted that what we see is going to be here forever, and that is not the case. They have their own viewpoint, I suppose, that but we just take this land for granted, and we can't afford to do that anymore. And so it just gives the importance to looking at the big picture. And so hopefully the talk by Dr. Dominic Della Sala here in September was the beginning of the learning curve for many people, which I will say, just to plug, that whole talk, that presentation is on GWA's YouTube channel. And so I want to put that out there. Thanks to you, Ben, for making that happen.
I was gonna plug it in case you didn't, but it's
Oh,
perfect.
okay.
Yeah.
All right. Good.
I want to ask a follow-up question to something, Jim, you brought up kind of more towards the beginning of our conversation. You and correct me if I misinterpreted this, but you were speaking about how we as humans put boundaries on ecosystems that may not be representative. We have a tendency to put boundaries on ecosystems that may not be representative of what actually the ecosystem processes that are actually taking place in those landscapes. And to me, that just, I'm curious if your background in environmental literature has informed the viewpoints that you currently hold in conservation issues. And if you could talk a little bit more about that.
Well, yes, it does. And a lot of that comes from people who are scientists as well as very fine writers. Aldo Leopold would be one example. I mean, we have a number of very good scientists in our group, Montanans for Wildlife and Wilderness. We have some people who have taught at MSU. We have other people who are ecologists. And my experience, in thinking about the literature I've read, is a very deep respect for natural processes and the biotic community. Whether it's Aldo Leopold in the Sand County Almanac or Rachel Carson, not only in her book Silent Spring, but in her earlier books on the sea, which were deeply popular. And I remember actually reading before I read Silent Spring that there is a sense that we don't fully know nature, and yet we presume to, and now have to, act as stewards of it. And as a result, we ought to be extremely cautious about what we do, because a lot of what we do is irreversible, especially if we take away habitat or introduce invasive species. It's very, very hard to reverse. We can restore certain areas, and restoration biology is a wonderful discipline, but there's a limit to how much we can do to reverse human activity. Now, when you said that, I'd mentioned that we draw boundaries around ecosystems. That's not quite the way I would put it. I guess I would say that we do have a pretty good understanding of where ecosystems are, and we can draw a boundary of ecosystems, but we also have drawn certain boundaries that cross in the middle of ecosystems. For example, the Yellowstone National Park is part of a much greater Yellowstone ecosystem. And within that ecosystem, we have the national park, we have private land, we have wilderness study area, we have national forest. In other words, we have got a lot of different kinds of managed land within one entire ecosystem. And that doesn't make it any easier to manage the ecosystem. It makes it harder because, we've got grazing, we have hunting and trapping in some areas, we have a commercial development, we have new housing on private land. We have recreation and so forth. So it is still one greater Yellowstone ecosystem, because nature doesn't in and of itself recognize these other boundaries, but in the end, it has to live with them. Wildlife has to live and die with them. And so, in order to give wildlife the greatest chance to survive and to thrive, it's important to preserve some areas in which human encroachment is absolutely minimized. Now, the original intention of the Wilderness Act of 1964 also, of course, recognized that human beings often need this. Maybe not everyone, but a lot of people need some area in which they can be in a contact with nature that is as far away from human building, human technology as possible. A lot of people camp simply to have some kind of experience of that. A lot of people hike to have an experience of that. A lot of people go into the wild in order to have that experience, whether they're walking or on horseback or cross-country skiing or whatever. And I think that that is something that's essential for human beings, at least for many of us as well. So it's a very complicated situation, obviously, in terms of these boundaries. But at a certain point, you have to say it is possible to lose what is at the center of gravity of all of this, which is natural habitat where wildlife can thrive and where human beings can feel that they can go for some special presence, even for some spiritual regeneration. And that once you have that go away, once you reduce it, it will not come back. I mean, you just look at the history of this or any other country and you see that once it's gone, it's gone. That's why there are often these fights over whether one president is going to create a national monument and then another president's going to reduce the size of it and then another president's going to come back in and increase the size of it again. Well, you could sort of argue you can do that with national monuments to some degree legally. But the good thing about wilderness is once it's declared, you cannot change it unless Congress decides to change it again. And that's why Montanans for Wildlife and Wilderness wants to preserve the wilderness study areas that are in Montana, and particularly the one that's in the Gallatin Range, the Highlight Porcupine Buffalo Horn area. I mean, again, we have to use our imaginations. What are things going to look like in 2050, 2060? I've got two grandkids growing up here in Bozeman. One is 6 and one is 4. I want to think, what's it going to be like for them when they're my age?
Coming back to M4WW and some of the communication materials surrounding the organization that have come out, there's been an action plan mentioned called the Five. Could you tell me a little bit about that?
That's something that we have not publicized really yet on our website as such, but it has been a matter of discussion, and I think our group is pretty much so agreed that the five is a good idea. And let me just go down through the list of those elements of the five. One is to provide a system in place to enlist and give voice to scientists. And we have really tried to do that. I mean, if people go to our website, which is MT, the number 4WW, that is MT, the number 4WW, they will see that on our resources, we include a number of papers by scientists. So that's point one, give voice for science to inform what is being done. The second is let's enforce existing rules and regulations. That is to say, let's have the Forest Service and others enforce the regulations that are actually on the books. It's hard. We're talking about a big area, and we're not talking about a lot of people who can do enforcement, but that's important. The third is we hope to create a volunteer roster and develop some projects with an emphasis on restoration. That is, on trying to make sure that areas that have to some degree been degraded are restored. And that goes into point four, which is restore and rehabilitate damaged and misused wilderness lands. And that involves restoration biology to some extent. You could even say that the reintroduction of wolves was part of that because it was an attempt to reestablish a healthier ecosystem. And then the fifth one is to consider options for permanent protection. As I said, the wilderness study areas are permanently protected until they are changed. Wilderness is permanently protected until it is changed. But my goodness, there are areas that aren't wilderness and that aren't wilderness study areas that are not permanently protected. So, what might this involve? It might involve things like conservation easements. It might involve the idea of national monuments. It might involve the idea of setting aside certain lands in trust for protection. So those are the five elements that would attempt to address some of the issues that we're facing now and we will continue to face for decades to come.
How can people who are interested become involved with Montanans for Wildlife and Wilderness?
First of all, I hope people go to our website. I mentioned that before, MT, then the number 4WW. Take a look at that. It's not a website that's highly complicated. It's self-explanatory. And people can take a look at it on their desktop or their laptop or their phone. See what it is like. Get informed. There's a contact information on there. And people could join our email list or request to do that, or they could give their information on that contact, and then we would be in touch with them, put them on an email list if they wish to, or let them know about upcoming meetings. We hope in the future that we will branch out into some social media presence as well. For now, we have a website that just went up very recently, and so that's our first step in trying to reach out to to a larger number of people.
And to be clear, that website is a .org, right?
Yes, I'm sorry. Yes, absolutely. .org at the end. Yep, MT number 4, www.org. That's the website that we have up now.
Perfect. Thank you. We have a couple minutes. Clint, are there any recent activities of the GWA you'd like to briefly highlight?
Yeah, in the field of conservation and preservation of our natural world, there's always something going on, especially in this day and age under this administration. Things are not as easy, not that they ever were easy, but there's more and more threats that are facing our wildlife and our natural lands, our wildlands. Recently, we were involved in litigation in a court case in Helena, Montana, over the we had a temporary injunction over the proposed plan by the Montana Fish and Wildlife Commission and Montana Fish, Wildlife and Parks over the management of wolves. We're still waiting for the decision on that, but we're actually involved in at least two other litigation actions, one against the State Department of Idaho over their management of wolves, over the trapping of wolves, and then we were involved in some action against the Fish and Wildlife Service over their delisting of wolves in Montana or the Northern Rocky Mountains. And so our group, as you know, we do litigate, and we've got probably at least one, if not two or three other potential actions coming up in the future, going into next year. We're just kind of waiting to see how that all plays out. But it's not that we are wanting to litigate, but it seems like at times that seems to be the only thing that works in order to get the results that we think this planet desperately needs. And we wish that wasn't the case. I certainly do. But it does seem like that's the only thing that gets people's attention. So we have those potentials, and then we're next year actually is going to be our 50th anniversary. We plan on promoting that. We plan on highlighting that to really get others involved. We have grown substantially, I like to think, in the last 4 or 5 years since I've been president, and there's much to still do. The job is great, and the task is large, but we need people to fulfill those roles. So that's where we are presently.
This has been Wilderness and Wildlife, a presentation of the Gallatin Wildlife Association in Bozeman, Montana. More information about the association and its activities can be found on its website, www.gallatinwildlife.org. To hear more of these half-hour interviews, go online to kgvm.org or to buzzsprout.com and scroll down to Wilderness and Wildlife. Thanks for listening. I'm your host, Ben Churchwell.